Hello again, and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. This is Carrie Weber, Associate Editor for America Magazine. And today we are speaking with Catherine Gettick-Soltis, who is an Assistant Professor of Christian Ethics at Villanova University and the Director of the Center for Peace and Justice Education there. She wrote her dissertation on a virtue ethics approach to justice, looking at the reform of the American prison, and she's also served as Catholic chaplain at the Suffolk County House of Correction in Boston.
Now, could you tell me a little bit about how you became interested in prisons and the justice system?
Sure. It was mostly by happenstance. A year after college, I did a volunteer program with the Franciscans, and that got me into prison for a bit. And I just became enthralled with the experience of working, in this case it was with women, just in basic tutoring and mentoring. And it was such a forgotten place, but this also a place of raw humanity that I felt compelled to go back to. And so when I was in Boston, I started volunteering again, but there, in that case, with a ministry program. And from then on, it really took theological significance in my life, and certainly the idea of being in prison comes out of the Gospels. But this notion that, you know, if we are in a world where there are prisons and there are people imprisoned, I, for whatever reason, which I still haven't figured out, feel compelled to be there, because there's something both fundamentally inhuman about keeping our brothers and sisters captives, but it also has these moments of real human experience and interaction that I feel, you know, somehow called to participate in and try to bring out that humanity to people who have not yet gone into a facility.
Right. It's a very complex world, both, you know, just logistically and emotionally. Now, you served as a prison chaplain eventually as well in Suffolk County, is that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into that experience, and what was that like for you?
Again, it was something I stumbled on where I started, you know, helping with a communion service. There's so many different levels of custody that, you know, even if there were enough, you know, ordained people to do services, it's just very hard to cover. We had up to 12 services a weekend just to get all the men and women in the facility access. Mm-hmm. So I started with one service, and then after the chaplain had to leave, I was asked to take over, and it was amazing to do both, continue to do services, to do one-on-one meetings on the unit with the men and the women. This facility actually had both in different parts of the building. It had immigration detainees as well. And I would train new volunteers, many of whom came from theology programs, some who were training for religious life. It was a really powerful experience to be able to see the place of religious practice and religious community in a prison, in a jail setting, and to really, you know, bring alive the words of the gospel each week. And I remember one inmate, she said, after we were surrounded this little metal picnic table on the unit, and, you know, all gathered around, and some other women were down the unit watching TV, and so, you know, we're just all trying to huddle around doing our service, doing our thing. And afterwards, she said, "This is the best church I've ever been to." And it's my experience, too. I mean, certainly some of the most powerful religious experiences I've had have been with men and women in prison, actually.
Now, do you find your interactions with the men are different than those with the women? Do they treat you differently? Is there a different dynamic at all?
There are differences. I mean, I think in many ways the men are more protective of me. It's funny. I you know, feel actually very safe in prison because I, you know, have a sense that they know why I'm there, and if something were to happen, there are a lot of people who would want to make sure I didn't get hurt. You know, anything can happen, but the men are very actually they're more quiet, and the women are the ones that are sometimes harder to get their attention, and it's funny, the energy level actually is sometimes higher with the women. But it's nice. I think that there are some differences working with both populations, but the sincerity and the authenticity of the faith, you know, journeys that they're on definitely is something that runs constant through both.
Now, would you say there is a kind of basic theology through which we can view prisons as Catholics?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I look to, and when working with my students on these issues, you know, is the restorative justice movement has certainly been very strong and has been taken up by the U.S. Catholic bishops in their most recent statement on the criminal justice system in America, which came out in 2000, that statement did. And this idea of restoring the community is really important. Many times restorative justice ends up focusing on victim-offender reunification or conferencing and so forth. That can be the image that many people have. In truth, it's victim, offender, and community. But the really deep biblical image that's, I think, terribly important is this notion of this wholeness of community, shalom, and this notion that justice fundamentally is about trying to bring, restore the community as God intended it, which we have never gotten to yet anyway. So ultimately, that this notion that punishment, therefore, is only going to have any purpose in the service of helping us realize the kind of people and the kind of community and the kind of common good that God has intended from the very beginning. And there's something radically inclusive about that. That's another piece of my personal sort of focus theologically on prisons, is this notion that banishment or exile can never be a permanent status, right? That marginalization of peoples is not a solution. And so that these are all members of our community, and we cannot stand still. We cannot accept sort of a situation in which we discard certain members and think that they are somehow outside the bounds of the community that we care about and want to preserve.
Now, how do we go about including prisoners in this community when they are so physically separated from what most of us experience in our daily lives?
Sure. Well, I mean, this is one of the issues is really about how permeable our prisons are made to the rest of society and how many outside visitors can get in to tutor or to start mentoring programs, in fact, that bridge helping an inmate during the time of incarceration and having that same mentor, for instance, on the outside in a type of aftercare reentry program, helping those resources have a transition. Those kind of programs, those are just some examples, are critical. They're not usually at the top of the list of our facilities because they can make managing populations more difficult. But having the doors of the prison more open to the society is critical. Where we locate our prisons, thinking about that, is important as well. But something that I've been really touched by is how many opportunities do we actually give imprisoned men and women to contribute to the community, even while they're within bars. So one example in local Philadelphia here is we have the Philadelphia Mural Arts Program. And several years ago, it went into our maximum security facility called Greaterford, where many of the inmates are from Philadelphia. And they wanted to make murals that are ultimately on the walls of buildings in this city. And so many of those murals were created simply by the inmates. Some of them are created by inmates along with victims and victims' advocates. So there are many ways in which, even though they are physically separate, we can recognize that there are contributions to make. And that there's a real presence that can still be felt in our communities. And even my students go in and tutor at the prison, and the impact that those inmates make on those students really changes them and changes the people around them. And that's another way that prisoners can reach out. And we have to see that actually is not just a nice thing that might happen on the side, but something that is integral to actually being able to create justice.
And what have your students' impressions of the prisons been? Did they have certain expectations that were met or not met when they entered the prison?
They're all pretty nervous because they have images from TV and film about a very dark, scary place that's violent and out of control. They go in and they realize that it's not as threatening as they might imagine, but the most important realization that they have time and again is that they say they realize fairly quickly after conversations with the men and women that they're human beings. And these are some of the best students that I've ever taught, and they who are really truly compassionate, but they really confront the fact that they, for some reason, weren't really expecting to meet face-to-face another human being like themselves. And so it's this twofold realization in a way that, wow, these are human beings, and wow, I was actually not thinking that they were going to be human in some way. So I think it's a deep-seated preconception that has really affected a lot of our society and allows us to think about prisons in a certain way because we have considered that somehow there's something defective, there's something not like us about men and women behind bars, but they are us, we are them.
Now, Villanova also has a degree program for some of the prisoners in the area, is that correct?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have every semester we're able to staff a few classes, and that the men there are able to attend, and they're enrolled in programs, so working toward an associate's or even bachelor's if they're able to go that long. They have to be very patient and diligent in order to get it, but they are amazing students, and I had the fortune of teaching an ethics class at the prison last spring, and some of the best conversations I've had because they value education and they are invested in it as a real way for them to develop themselves and to create possibilities for them in the future.
Now, that's interesting. Did you have a different experience teaching an ethics class at a prison than in the college, or did you find the folks asking different questions, or did they have a similar approach to your average student?
Now, there were some interesting differences. Compared to the classes I would teach on campus, there'd be certain issues that would come up that would be very controversial, for instance, on campus, and yet be a no-brainer in the prison. So, for instance, thinking about our shared responsibilities. And there is much more of a sense of strong individualism, autonomy that we get from the students on campus, whereas the men that I worked with in prison, it was not very much of an argument as to whether or not we needed to take care of each other and look for the vulnerable. I mean, I think the lived experience of these men as being in positions in society that are not always given the kind of support they are needed, that they deserve, makes them much more convinced at the fact that no one's really earning what they need, you know, deserving. There's not a sense of entitlement and personal merit that, or the illusion perhaps of personal merit that you have on campus. So that's one interesting piece. But another way is that, you know, the students on campus were very convinced of the possibility of a universal justice, whereas the men in prison weren't really sure that there was anything they could buy into because you have one system of criminal law enforcement that they don't necessarily buy into, and that they are more likely to rely on their closer networks of family and friends and neighbors to trust. There was a sense already that we already have multiple cultures that have different ethical systems already here in the U.S. that they live day to day, which was not a felt reality for the students on campus. So it's a very interesting contrast at times.
Right. Are those views reconcilable? Is there a good way to proceed?
Well, I mean, I think the category of experience is critical. I mean, there's certain experiences that the men in prison have had that I think that some of the ideas the students have need to confront those lived realities, and many of them have not had the opportunity or even realized it's out there. I mean, at the same time, you know, there is a skewed lived experience at this point for these men that they are in a day-in, day-out situation that is extremely control-oriented, hierarchical, and that, you know, that's hopefully not the reality that we wish to create in the world and what communities look like. So I think that they need to be reconciled by two pieces coming from either side. One is, you know, what are the real experiences of people who are marginalized usually from the beginning of their life? That, you know, what does it look like when you don't have all these resources at your disposal? And then also reconcile it with what are the types of communities that we really want to be living in, and what does a healthy human interaction, human respect on a daily basis look like? I think you have to really investigate those two categories in order to start coming with some answers that might be able to bridge the two groups.
Now, what about just people on the outside sort of looking to stay connected with those in prison? Do you think it's easy for people to kind of connect with tutoring programs or things like that? It seems like sometimes prison can just be sort of obscure to us.
And indeed, although a lot of people think about trying to stay out of prison, I had myself and seen others have a difficult experience of getting in to do things like tutor and mentor and volunteer. I mean, so it really, I think, it depends on the facility, what and who is employed by that facility, what kind of options are available, because always you need an existing program in order to that you could participate in. You're not going to be able to create something de novo, by pitching it to a facility. So it's going to be dependent in that way. But another option is to look at different reentry programs that might be in your area, programs for ex-offenders. So even if you don't have a clear structure to tap into to get into the facility, to be a resource for those who are just exiting can be a huge piece, because those who are just exiting also have, unfortunately, significant likelihood of reentering. So and many times working with ex-offender populations is this limbo moment of perhaps being in between sentences, unfortunately. So that would be, I would say, the way for folks who are interested. But certainly looking up the ministries that, for Readership of America, I think people could look to see, who is doing prison ministry and to see if they need volunteers, which in my experience, we definitely need volunteers. In my experience in Boston and Philadelphia is that it's a very special ministry, but more people are able to do it than think they can.
Do you find it hard to sort of balance compassion with a desire for justice when you're going into these programs? Because, I think maybe a lot of people would say these men or women have done horrible things. They deserve to be put away or be punished or removed from society.
Right. And I mean, I think here is, again, a place where the theological background is critical, because, what we're saying is these people have sinned. And then that makes it rather arbitrary which sinners we think are ones that need to receive harsh punishment and which ones are the other ones walking around on the streets. There's a sense that if we believe seriously in forgiveness and redemption, then it's rather arbitrary to decide that the people who have violated particular public laws are the ones who need to experience condemnation in a public way, a public lasting way in this life, versus everyone else who's still struggling to do the right thing. This maybe has not yet gotten caught up in a system that announces it so clearly. And I mean, I think that really, for me, the sense is that our vocation as Christians is to never give up hope on anyone. And that idea of having hope in our brothers and sisters is actually a fundamental way that we treat people as humans. So there's a sense of wanting people to, move away from paths that are harmful to themselves, to others. Real pain has been caused. But at the same time, the notion that we've received is that the most important thing is to come back, to return, to accept a forgiveness that we could never possibly earn. And I think it's critical that someone is mediating that kind of forgiveness for our brothers and sisters who are in the prisons, and especially in this country, since we have the largest number in the world.
Right. Well, thank you so much. Your insights are fabulous. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.